SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races into hour two, and just off with Marty McGee. And as I had listed off of Marty's work yesterday, that field for the Pegasus shaping up, it's fun. It's a fun group. McKenzie Accelerate, Audible, Bravazo, City of Light, Gunnavera, and this weekend, Santa Anita and at Gulfstream and elsewhere, the number of horses that have run back. I know that everybody's talked about how many horses retired and the 3-year-old retirements, but there's been a steady supply of horses that did not take much of a break coming out of Breeders' Cup, and that includes that San Gabriel. And in fact, we can talk about a little bit with Hammer too, but the San Gabriel next shares, and we've got some horses coming back from Breeders' Cup who ran disappointingly, but they're still coming back and getting their new season started. Hammer, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Steve. Happy 15th for you, right? 15 years.
The show is entering its 15th year here on SiriusXM. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Did the time go, right?
I have no idea. I have no idea.
Amazing. I'll tell you what, you've come a long way. And I tell you what, very positive influence on the game, without a doubt. I mean, your positive energy during the last 15 years has really helped. I mean, went from nothing, no radio out there at all, to you and you got Mike Penn out there. You got him going, but you're 3 hours in the morning every day. I think is a must listen, and to everybody that's in the game, and it's the positiveness of your show that keeps everybody going, I think, and everybody wants to be on Steve Bick on Monday morning. I know that. So.
Well, that's a. That's a can't miss proposition. Yeah, you always have happy right. Conversations with those people. They're still basking in the afterglow,
right?
Of their big wins.
I remember way back when I we try to get someone on in the morning or whatever we were on, and what show is that now? What's he going to ask me? a little bit worried, but from the very beginning, when people went on your show, they did good. It wasn't like, oh, don't go on there, you're never going to win. Everybody did good.
That's true.
Good about people. and believe me, you need that. You needed that to start off. But anyway, you're a fixture now, so it's been a pleasure to be on with you for 15 years. So it's that second job always had. Now it's my first job.
There you go. That's it. Well, welcome in co-host Rick Hammerly.
There you go. Well, it's pretty funny because, I'm just starting to get back into the swing of things after the holidays and, starting looking around for some things to do, and I've had a lot of calls and things like that. So, it's kind of awkward sometimes when you're out and about. People say, what do you do? So now I say, well, I'm on the radio. I do some radio work. So it's not lying, but at least I'd rather than doing nothing. So it's pretty funny. You've given me an out.
There you go. I love it. That's perfect.
Classic. It's classic. It pays well, too. It's very good. So.
Oh, yeah. Did you guys? What did you do for Christmas? And did you guys have usually a travel, no?
You know what? No, we did not travel. We stayed home. Normally, I do the cooking for everybody, but it was kind of just a weird vibe around. So we did. We actually went out to a restaurant for Christmas. Didn't cook. Was pretty cool. I said, wow, this is all right. So I don't know how long that's going to last. So we did that last week. I went to Palm Springs for a little golf outing. And actually, We're going to Tucson for the weekend, this weekend. A little wedding anniversary, which we never get to go anywhere. So taking advantage of the free time. Don't know how long that's going to last. Like I said, been kind of busy lining a few things up, and probably, I'd say within, in this short period of time, I'll be doing something, or I'll have something lined up. But I need to tell you, as bad as the first week was, I'm really getting to enjoy the time off, and it's in this game is just go until you have a stop, and I'm telling you, it's been pretty nice. So they say they stop and smell the flowers. I'll give you a perfect example of that. I do a lot of hiking and on my off time, and I've had a lot more off time, so I go on a. I have a couple trails. One's in Malibu that's actually still closed because of the fires, and one close to my house, Rocky Peak. I've probably been up that trail 200-300 times, literally. And, I put the headphones on, and I just put the head down and go up. I've been the last five times I've been up there, I've seen stuff I've never seen in 10 years. Rock formations, side trails, plants, stuff. And so I go, wow, so this is what it means when it says stop and smell the flowers. So. I highly recommend a little break for someone to just, enjoy things because your head's not going 100 miles an hour. But starting to get back into it. I took a break and now starting to, get back into the news and reading some forums. And, it's a tough game to stay away from. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And at the same time, even when I take these two very distinct periods of time at the end of June or first week in July, we'll take a week and change, and then the 10-12 days at Christmas. And if you turn away for too many days in a row, you can't believe what goes on. And actually it that feeds into the question I get asked pretty regularly, which is, oh my gosh, 15 hours a week, 3 hours a day. I mean, do you have things to talk about? It's like, do I have things to talk about? I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you don't have sometimes 3 hours isn't enough. I mean, there's so much that goes on, and believe me, when I come back from a vacation, I'll be pulling stuff out next week and updating people. Yesterday I didn't even get a chance to mention Dave Jacobson has gone and officially retired. He was slowly coming out to California to watch the string out there, but he's going to officially walk away from the training side, and he'll keep owning some horses, but. There's an example. Yesterday I didn't even get a chance to mention that Jacobson, little bit of a lightning rod in his long association with the game, and he was away for a long time, came back and had some some real success, but he's 10 years and back in the game, and now he's quit. And you had some dealings with him, right? When he started to come out.
Yeah, no, he was out here, I'm going to say four or five years ago, and then he left, and then he came back the last couple years, his son out here, and a couple of grandkids, and he was enjoying things, having a little stable out here, 20, 25 horses, go up and down. And then, my dealings with him were always fine. And then next thing you know, he has, during one Del Mar meet, not this one, maybe the last one, his horses ended up in New Mexico, and they were scattered around and just kind of lost contact. And then when we came back this year from Del Mar, it just didn't turn into stall application. So obviously some things were going on in his head, and he wanted to get out, but now he's officially out of the game. So, kind of wild. And, he did well when he was back. He for us, he ran his horses. And so he's got extensive real estate holdings in New York, so maybe that's taken up too much of his time. And it's not easy working on both coasts. So maybe that had a toll. And, hey, he's going to be an owner. But, he'll He owned most of his horses anyway, but now he'll strictly be an owner, and you know, we wish him well as he moves on.
I want to ask you. Actually, you've got an interesting. There's an interesting sidebar to this that I saw discussed that you can give people some insight on, and you mentioned the stalls, and I know that some of the comments that Jacobson was quoted really more referred to the East Coast. He's frustrated with a topic we discussed before Christmas. In fact, had Joe Applebaum on and Pat Kelly. And we talked about the compensation, the workman's compensation difficulties, and he cited that and the cost for a smaller to medium size outfit. And then I saw some comments in response to Jacobson's comments about the stall allocations it's tough for smaller outfits to get stalls. And explain how this works so people understand, that there's some big outfits, and yes, they're important to the racetrack, but explain how outfits, everybody does what they can to satisfy, all size barns.
Well, first of all, I hear a lot and I feel that, we don't like the small trainer. I mean, that is such a myth. It is so false. We go out of our way, especially out here. When we were going over the salt to try and take care of, quote, the little guy. I mean, the big guy, they're set. They're going to be fine. And, they have the bigger guys have a limit, whatever that number may be. And we don't go over that unless we fill up the rest of the barn area with whoever needs the stalls and, quote, the little guy. I did find it odd that he counted himself as, quote, a little guy when he's had, he's got horses on both coasts and, runs a pretty, medium-sized operation with the number of horses. So as far as the stalls go, you give it to the guys that run, obviously, very simple equation. And, out here in Southern California, we don't have the mega, mega guy. In other words, 200-300 horses type of guy, 150 horses. Guys like O'Neill and Phil D'Amato and Baltus and those guys, they have 80 to 100, 90, right around there. And, it seemed like the 7 or 8 or 9 guys in that range, they all ran. Which was, it's a good thing. It's tough when you have guys with 50, 60 horses that don't run. All right, the guys out here all ran. So, you had to give them, pretty much the limit where they wanted to go. And most of those guys, in fact, I'm going to say all of those guys, are split up. They're split to the home track, Santa Anita or Del Mar, who's running, and most of them have a second string at Los Alamitos or San Luis Rey. So they're split up. Nobody has 90 horses at Santa Anita or 60 horses at Del Mar or anything like that, because we do that because we want to put the trainers with the 10s and 12s horses. Those guys, all those people that started that have 80, 90 horses, they started with 4, 5, 6 horses. So you need these young, quote, little guys to start, to form a business, get going, and move up. And there's a couple guys there. Andrew Lerner, I know, has moved up, and Dan Blacker's starting to, move up. You need these guys, quote, smaller guys, to get going. So the smaller guy. No, you got to help the smaller guy. It's like the big guy's automatic. So now internally, just being able to run a business and get things going, there might be some toughness there as far as getting on track. But if you do the right thing and you run your horses and you just kind of do the right thing, you're going to get stalls. I know, especially out here. So, that's the way that goes. No racetrack can survive without, quote, the little guy. I mean, we need him all the time. And like I said, if you're a smaller guy, and you got 6 or 8 horses and they're all running, I mean, geez, we want you. Racetracks want guys like that. So. you know, the stall process is a very tricky, tricky business, and sometimes the feelings are hurt, and sometimes the numbers, you know, reflect more than they should, and that's how the stalls are done. I mean, a lot of it's just black and white. You run, you get stalls. You don't run, you don't get stalls. So,
the other thing about it is that it's fluid. And it, especially if the medium to small guy in question is a claiming outfit that isn't necessarily, you know, counting on you know, an influx of 2-year-olds in August or September, October, but somebody that, you know, has a floating, you know, amount of horses. And so even if they get, you know, 6 or 8 stalls, if they claim a horse, they go across the shed row and there's people, you know, they've got friends elsewhere that, you know, can I put, you know, if they claim one and they don't have room, they find a stall for a couple of days and, you know, the arrangements get made. I mean, it's not as if, right?
You're 100% right. So there's a difference between stalls and horses. If there's 2,000 stalls at a racetrack, there's not 2,000 horses there. There's about a 10%, you know, you need some movement. I mean, you know, if you didn't have, your arm didn't have an elbow to move a little bit, you know, you just walk around with your arm straight. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's flexibility back there. You have 10 stalls. Odds are you don't have 10 horses in them 100% of the time. You might have 6. And you're getting a couple 2-year-olds to come in. You're going to claim a couple. One gets claimed from you. The number goes up and down. And so we watch that. I mean, if you have 10 stalls and 3 months go by and you've never had more than 6 horses in there, we'll probably, you know, ask you to take a couple stalls back. But the numbers go up and down. And if you do have 10 stalls and they are full and you do claim one, what, you know, the correct thing to do is to form the racing office or the stall guy and say, hey, look, I might claim one today. See if you can find a spot for me. Or is it okay if I go in with Jimmy across the way for a little bit so we get sorted out? So 100% right about the fluidity. I mean, horses are in. And if you just see the numbers of horses that go in and out every single day, it's a movement thing. So like I said, somebody that has 25 stalls is going to have probably 18 to 22 horses in there at any given time, and it could go a little higher, it could go a little lower. So the idea that, like I said, stalls are different than horses, and as I said, if you give somebody 20 and they haven't had over 12 in there for a while, then it's like, hey, you know, maybe we need to take a couple back and give them to somebody else. But you try and work within the number that they have. Sometimes that includes the ponies that you know, it's like, hey, I give you 18 stalls, so what about my 2 ponies? And then either you find us, you know, kick out a horse or two, or we find another spot for a pony. But it's 100% fluid. I'm glad you brought that up. Nothing from day to day, the number of horses that go in and out of a stable area is quite a number.
I'm glad we slip this aside in, and I mean, we've discussed it off and on, but I don't think, you know, people react, you know, that have never, you know, really been on a backstretch and really don't have much of an understanding of how it works in reality.
Right, and what I say when people do the right thing, in other words, you know, let's say, you know, you're a trainer back there or whoever you may be, and you have 10 stalls, and you plan on bringing 4 more horses in that puts you over the limit, and you just decide to just do it yourself and not tell anybody and show up at the gate with 4 horses, and well, where are they going? Well, I don't really know. You know, when I say do the right thing is, you know, you sit down and you say, hey, this is what I'd like to do. You know, we alert the stall man, try and find a spot for you. So when the horses show up at, you know, 2 in the morning or some odd hour, the guards go, well, I don't have a spot for you. So you continually do that, you know, it's not a good thing. So you just want to, you know, it's all about communication when it comes down to that stuff. So a lot of stuff that people, you know, on out there comment on and don't know what really goes on in here or what goes on a backside and the ins and outs of getting horses on the grounds and the correct way to do it. There's a lot of little factors in there. But it's all about communication, as it is in 90% of the stuff that anybody does. And like I say, you do the right thing and you tell people what you're doing and are trying to do, things are going to work out a lot smoother. So I guess very, very good. I'm glad you brought that up about the fluidity of the horses going in and out. And that's everywhere. That's not just here. Anyway, that's everywhere.
Now, there's some sidebars to this too that we could venture into, but I'll go in a different direction. One thing that I haven't brought up with you through the end of the year, and there's been a lot more written and discussed, you know, in these last 2-3 weeks since we talked last, since the end of the year. What's your take on the not just the accelerate justify discussion, but you know, you had a unique view of things this year in particular, having been instrumental in getting a race put up that launched Justify's career. What's your read, Hammer, on what feels like some weird backlash and anti Triple Crown sentiment, which I'm kind of mystified by here the last month plus?
You know, we brought it up a month ago or so, but we didn't talk at length about it. I think it's a disappointment. I mean, it's that Justify, you know, went away, I think it's hard to swallow, and it's hard for people to, you know, understand that, you know, hey, this horse in 112 days, he won 6 races. He's the, you know, he's the king, and all of a sudden he's gone. And they don't understand, you know, maybe the economics and the realities of the game. And, you know, I mean, you know, believe me, when I tell you this, there was nobody that was more disappointed inside than Bob Baffert, you know, for this horse to not be in his barn and be able to race the rest of the year. And as a 4-year-old going on, I mean, he just saw so much potential in that horse. And you know what? Think about that. He just won the Triple Crown. He got a little something that they saw. And, you know, no matter how big of a player you are in this game, meaning if you're, you know, you and me and own a few horses together and we've got some claimers out there, or you're a mid-range owner or you're a breeder operation, it costs a lot of money to participate in this game. And lots of times you don't see all the ones that you know, could have been a Justify, but just didn't quite make it. And at some point, you need to take some money off the table when you can in order to go back and continue on the operations effectively. And I think, you know, that's what they had to do. That's what they did. And, you know, it goes on with the game. But I think some people were disappointed. And, you know, just rightly so that gosh, here's one of the nicest horses we've seen in a long, long time, and poof, he's taken away from us. We don't get to see him. And, you know, accelerate. I mean, here's this horse that just ran everywhere he was supposed to run. And maybe he was just a reminder every time he ran that Justify wasn't running. I don't know what it was, but no, I still hear that. And, you know, you wonder how it would have been different if American Pharoah wasn't there and didn't win, you know, 4 years ago. 3, 4, 5 years ago, whatever that was, you know, to compare it with. And here comes Justify, and we got another, you know, nice horse, and Pofi's taken away. So I think it's more emotional than anything else, and I think just the fact that, you know, we didn't have that great of a 3-year-old crop. Who's coming back from it? And, you know, you started at the top, you got the best one, he's gone, and you know, now you got McKenzie picking up the baton, so to speak. But I think that's all it was, myself, just from the top to bottom. You know, people don't see Triple Crown winners and greatness that often, and it's, you know, here we get a chance to see one, and poof, it's taken away. So I think that's basically what it was or is.
How do you see the vote? Where would you weigh out?
You know, it's still a Triple Crown winner. I've been kind of, you know, when you sit down, you have to put a name down and which way you're going to go. Triple Crown winners are rare. I don't care, you know, if it happened in the next, you know, within a small span, comparatively 5-6 years, 4 or 5 years. The horse is just, I don't know. It's a Triple Crown winner. So that's huge for that. And then you got Accelerate, who literally ran all year. I think he won more mile and a quarter races than, you know, a lot of horses did over their careers. I'm talking about, you know, going back 100 years, winning that many races, and finished it off in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is the finals. You know, people vote differently and have different, you know, guidelines. You know, when I sit down and vote, I'm a big end-of-the-year guy. I do count the Breeders' Cup as, you know, almost double. I think that's where you're supposed to be if you're fit and able. And so when they compete there, I do give them a couple of extra bumps up the ladder. You know, career-wise, I'd like them to go all year. But, you know, this year was a little difficult with a Triple Crown winner. I mean, there hasn't been a Triple Crown winner ever that wasn't Horse of the Year. And somewhere along the line, that might just trump it all. And then, sometimes you go against your quote guidelines. I mean, I usually don't vote on a horse that hasn't run at least 4 times, and a horse that, you know, this, that. Everyone has their own little guidelines you have. So sometimes you they're guidelines, they're not rules, and sometimes you go outside the box. So, I mean, when you look back on this year, 10 years from now, and you look at the stats, I think the one thing that's going to stick out is Justify winning the Triple Crown.
I agree, and we're not trying to take away at all from Accelerate's campaign. I mean, it was a quality older horse campaign. I mean, it's textbook.
Textbook, and, you know, one out of town. I mean, when he went to Oaklawn, it did get beat, but competitively, and, you know, John Sadler's that hasn't been the greatest shipper over the years. You know, he's sent a lot of good horses out that haven't, you know, performed great or entirely well. And so when that horse ran good at Oaklawn early in the year, I was like, wow, this is the real deal. And they had a plan. They stuck by the plan. And then, you know, to go out of town and finish it up on the road, just the way it was planned, it was good. So, I mean, I feel so good for John breaking his, you know, getting over the zero in the Breeders' Cup and Costa Hironas and his team, his brother, and everybody involved. I mean, these are the greatest owners anyone could have. They're just the nicest people. They're into it. They've had some success, and it's always an interest how, you know, certain owners end up with certain trainers, and I don't know how they got together, but it was such a good fit. You see, sometimes you go, oh, that guy's never going to last, but, you know, and that's why when people come to me, I learned long ago, you know, friends will go, hey, can you recommend a trainer? And I used to go, oh, yeah, you know, pick out one of these two guys. And then 3 weeks later, you know, they're cussing each other out. So from now on, I give them a list of 10. Here, pick one of these 10. Never try to match anybody up. But with John and Costa, they seem to just click from the minute they hit it off. And so it's just super happy to get him back on the national stage. And, you know, he's going to win an Eclipse Award for older horse. And I tell you what, I sure hope he wins the owner award, because he, you know, I see up close, I've seen up close for the last, you know, 6-7 years that he's been involved, and he is a hands-on. He's here at the track. I don't think he's ever told John one thing about where to run a horse. He leaves it all up to John, and one thing they've been real good at is buying horses and bringing them in, and I guess he did that with an opening day there with that gift box. So he's just been a great owner, and just when he crosses the line, I think about that more than anything, having been, you know, so involved and so close with him. I had to get him because we named a new stake. What a shock on opening day here before I left, the Lady of Shamrock. And that was actually their first big horse. I always liked that filly, and she did well, and it was an opening on opening day. And I said, you know, I'm going to name this Lady of Shamrock, he kind of kidded me, and I said, well, I got to make sure you're going to show up on opening day. but so he liked that. But you know, guys like that need to be rewarded that for what they do and just to stick with it. And I'm hoping, obviously, I voted for him for owner, and I really think he deserves it. And he's, you know, because he's just performed year after year, and he's just he's probably, I would, if you had to pick a dream owner for a trainer, he certainly fits that bill.
I voted for him as well, actually, and you know, for those that, you know, that aren't aware beyond Accelerate, you know, the Catalina Cruiser and Yvetzi and you know, many more, and I thought this was a perfect opportunity. And I'm going to have this discussion next with Ed DeRosa. I don't understand the people who have managed to turn the ownership category into an abstention issue regarding, you know, ownership percentages. There, before you even start worrying about people that have fractional ownership, there's dozens of stakeholders involved in the game who are eligible to be selected as the owner of the year. And this year, Hronas and Klarman and Peter Brandt, and plenty of others, before you start worrying about people that have, you know, 10 and 15% of 60 horses. So I'm glad to hear your riff on you know, on the worthiness of Costa and team as owner of the year.
Yeah, just and then like I said, that you kind of, some guys you know, just because you like people and you wish they were there and you could vote for them, but you know, there's every reason to, and so we'll see what happens. I think, you know, I think because of the situation with the Justify situation, Accelerate, and trying to think, I think maybe you'll see some of that. You know, hey, I voted for Justify, so guess what? I'm gonna vote for Costa Hronas for owner of the year to kind of level it out in my head. You know, to give them both an award type of thing. So we'll see how it goes. When are they supposed to announce the finalists? What,
tomorrow?
Today? Is it today?
Tomorrow. 24 hours and 13 minutes from now, and I believe Jason Blewett and Gabby Gaudet will take to the microphone and lay out the finalists in each category.
They do three, right?
Yes.
Three from each? Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, I don't think there's a whole lot of mystery who, you know, most of the threes are going to be in the categories, but the ones at the end, the owner, breeder, trainer, jockey, sometimes get a little different than what you think. So it'd be interesting to see who's on those three lists.
Agreed. And there are some very strange decisions. There were some very difficult decisions to make too. I mean, in some of these, the turf and the sprinters, you know, there was a lot of ways to.
Gosh. I mean, the Philly and Mare Dirt. I mean, well, please.
Yeah, it was a weird, it was a weird season for the distaffers.
Yes, it was.
Hammer, did you handicap at all? Did you get a chance to?
Yeah, I looked a little bit. You know, you mentioned some of the return of some of the horses in the Breeders' Cup, and you know, I think we mentioned it for years and years and years about, you know, we have the Breeders' Cup in November at the end of the year, and here's these trainers and, you know, trying to get their horses in tip-top condition to compete in the Breeders' Cup, and they do, and then they go, okay, we're going to take a break. It's like, what are you doing? Your horse, you just got your horse in great condition. Why don't you keep him there and you know, keep running? And I think the Pegasus has affected a little bit of that, but I think in some of the other categories, it's like, wait a minute. You know, my horse is doing good. Just because he ran a bad race in the Breeders' Cup doesn't mean I need to let him down and you know, give him 3-4 months off. I mean, he's doing well. So I think maybe you're starting to see a little bit more of that mentality where, hey, let's just run him back if there's nothing, you know, especially if they haven't had too hard of a campaign to get there. I mean, they're in tip-top shape. That's always got me with the Triple Crown as well. you know, especially some of the lightly raced ones. I mean, you try to get them honed for the Derby, and they didn't run well. So then you put them away for 3 months. I never quite understood that, but that's why I'm not a trainer. But anyway, you've got the you've got a few stakes here. I think they were calling for rain on Sunday here, but I don't think it's going to rain. It's been rather chilly in the morning here. I don't want to, you know, people think, well, it's actually been in the 40s, which is rather chilly here when the wind blows. It gets even colder, but it's nice wintertime, and it's been good, but it has been a little chilly. But the San Gabriel, nice, you know, typical race that's been run out here the last few years. No stars. You know, we haven't had a super division leader in a long time, so hence the race has come up, you know, fairly even, and you know, this is one of those. You know, you look through here, I was looking through the race, there's only one horse that actually has a one in their PP line in the first three or four calls and in the whole race, and that's Big Ben. And you know, Proctor probably sends him out to get a little pace going for his other horse in there, Chicago Style, who fresh off the Hollywood Turf Cup. I mean, you got to look at Hollywood Style. Next Shares, you know, not sure he wants the mile and eighth, but here's one that is not going to be so far back. He's going to be mid pack and maybe closer to the front than the back. And if he can make a move early and maybe try and get the lead a little earlier and scoot off and say, come and catch me, he might be tough in here just because of that running style. A lot of these just like to lay back towards the end and, you know, push the button and hope they get a break and get through. But there's going to be a big pack back there, and that's why somebody that can make a middle move early and get the jump on them, like Next Share, is going to say, hey, come and get me. But, you know, I'm sure the mile and eighth is what he wants. And then, as usual, we try to open up the lure to this. Whenever somebody comes in from the outside in one of these races, you want to look at it. That's the outsider coming in here is Cleopatra Strike. Phil D'Amato has the horse coming out of the Malcolm Pierce barn, who does a real good job up there in Canada. Slam Dunk Racing, they make some good purchases. And this is first time D'Amato, he does super with these kind. The first time he gets horses, he rarely tries to give him one. So, you know, he's never run in a stake before. He won a nice allowance race up there. There's not a whole lot of, you know, total heavy hitters in here, so I'd give that horse a look. Cleopatra Strike with Pratt on, of course, you know, who does super well out here on the turf. But I'd take a look at him along with the Proctor Chicago Style. And like I said, Next Share's running lines, I mean, running style looks pretty good. The two-year-old race, the Sham. I mean, this is... you know, this is where it starts. This is, you know, let the road begin. Games begin here at Santa Anita. This little innocent little 1 mile, $100,000 race for three-year-olds here. Sometimes they have some good horses. The last three winners have been McKenzie, Gormby, who went on to win the Santa Anita Derby, and Collected. So everyone's doing, you know, that's a nice little run there. Golden Census won this race, the Pompamoose. So some decent runners in here. Not a stacked bunch. Everyone, of course, is anxiously awaiting any horse that Bob sends out, because at this point they're all good. Yeah, they haven't separated into I'm better than good or I'm not quite so good. So here's Coliseum. You know, facing winners for the first time. Interesting. It's a Godolphin Tappet in here, and it's just been, you know, been reading up, and it's always a well. You know, we need to try and teach him this. We try and teach him that. So. That's why he's got him in here. He needs to learn a little bit. Gunmetal Gray for Hollendorfer. I mean, I bet on that horse in the Breeders' Cup. I thought he was going to move up off the American Pharoah and didn't have the cleanest of trips at Churchill, but it doesn't really seem to have missed a beat. So, if this horse drifts up to 3-1 or something, I might take a look at him with Mike Smith gets back on board. Gunmetal Gray, because he's definitely not as bad as his last race. The race before, he only got beat four lengths to Game Winner. So it looks like those two in a match race. You know, you look at the other Baffert in there at Turf Horse, you kind of wonder what's going on in there with him. But, I mean, the race, it looks a little chalky with those two in there. With the third Gray Magician coming off a real good win for Peter Miller. So it looks like one of the grays in there, nothing fancy. And then on Sunday, the Santa Ynez, and you knew that was going to be a small field when you know, basically Bellafina said a couple months ago, hey, I'm going to run in there. You know, we forget Simon Callahan, who's the trainer, of course, of Bellafina, has had some good fillies along the way. I mean, was that Moonshine Memories last year, who kind of went the same route as Bellafina and then laid an egg in the Breeders' Cup. And don't forget, he trained Abel Tasman.
Mm-hmm.
Back when she, remember that, when she won the
sure.
race at Los Alamitos, right?
Starlet, I was there.
You were there, and I forget when, was that the wardrobe malfunction race, and that turned over to Bob and went on, but Bellafina, Simon knows what to do with this race horse, these kind of horses. Doing the right thing, just maybe sending her back to 7 furlongs is the right thing to do. Obviously, she likes Santa Anita. And, you know, Mother, she's on the rail. She's won from the rail, albeit at Churchill Downs going a mile. But she's had enough experience. She's been in the tool hole a few times, so I don't think that's going to bother her. Bellafina kind of gave it to her in the Del Mar Debutante, same distance. Whether it's going to be a turnaround or not, I'm not sure. But I think Bellafina hits this race right in the head. There's another horse in here named Tomlin. Unfortunately, is the only living thing named Tomlin that's performing this weekend.
That's a Steeler. That's a Steeler, Barb. There you go.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I came down. I saw that. I just started shaking my head again. So yeah. She'll be the only Tomlin out there on the weekend. But it comes down from Northern California. And traditionally, these horses don't run so well. But Steve Speck knows what he's doing. You know, he's one of those old-timers, loads him in the van, hauls him down himself, and comes down a few days early, enjoys it down here. And, you know, she's probably the best one from up north. And to give her a shot, they hit the board. But not going to go any further than that. Right. But so kind of a, you know, getting ready weekend for up here to start the ball for some of the three-year-olds, fillies and colts, and we'll see what happens down the road. Before I forget, when is the contest out there in Vegas? If I'm still available, I might head out there for that.
That'd be great. It's February 8th, 9th, 10th.
Well, it's into February now, 8, 9, 10. Okay, I forgot I wanted to ask you that.
Absolutely.
Yep. Good. Yes. I've never been able to go. I've never been able to do a lot of things this time of year. So taking advantage, actually going to Tucson this weekend for a few days, if I didn't mention that, just to get out. And so I'm enjoying my little bit of freedom because, well, you know, it's not going to last too much longer, but I've really, really enjoyed it. So that's it from sunny, cold California.
Hammer, I appreciate it, and we'll have a nice trip to Tucson. Get another. When was the last time you were there?
Last time I was in Tucson, probably 4 or 5 years ago at the conference, and you know, that's always different. Of course, I went to school there for, you know, many moons ago, and it, you know, it's a place that's just like a lot of places. Man, it was great, and then you go back and you go, hey. What's going on? It's a little different, but always did like Tucson. One of the few places anywhere you could ski in the afternoon and go lay by. I mean, ski in the morning and go lay by the pool in the afternoon. I don't think we'll be doing that this time, but it's a great little city down there. A lot of action going on. Hopefully, there may even be a home basketball game to go to. But just gonna kick back, relax, and watch some football.
Nice.
And do a little hiking.
Have a terrific time, and we will we'll talk next week.
Sounds great. Thanks. Happy New Year, everybody.
Rick Hammerly, folks. Away they go on your Twitter. Hit a couple of interesting topics, actually. I'm glad we did that stall management discussion, because I see, you know, some people speculating on things that just, you know, don't really know the inner workings on that. You know, you just hear bits and pieces. Let's take a break. Top of the hour. Yet to visit with Ed DeRosa and Tom Quigley and Jay Pribman. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There are places where being who you are is a punishable offense. These places have many names, but the ones who flee have one. Refugee. And it is in the name of the refugee that Hyas has dedicated itself for the last 130 years. Created in the name of the Jewish people, 4.5 million rescued and resettled so far. When they said, "Give us your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free," we were the ones at the docks helping them breathe free. Only now it's a farmer from Darfur, a shop owner from Syria, a family from Ukraine, a child from Colombia, a Christian from Iran, a gay man from Uganda.
The 65 million souls who still wander the earth in search of sanctuary.
Why? Maybe it's because being Jewish means you don't have to be reminded never to forget. Hyas, for the refugee.
Visit HIAS.org to understand the mission and support the work of Hyas.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.